Everyone has a story, and we all learn lessons through our experiences. In Bubble Wrap, you will hear lessons learned through our engaging interviews that are applicable to business, communications, and Christianity. Today on Bubble Wrap.
You try to be all things to all people, you're nothing to no one. And this is where many brands break down, is because they can't make those tough choices.
This show is for all people who want to grow professionally and spiritually. I'm your host, Kristen Getzey.
We have a fun and applicable topic for all listeners today. We're talking about personal branding, one of my favorite subjects. So just to detail a little bit about what that means, personal branding is a process of learning about yourself and just determining how you can influence others and their thoughts and expectations when you work with them or when you're just around them. And just so you know, what you do for a living is just an expression of your brand. It's not actually your brand. So we're going to have more on that in just a little bit. But right now, I'd like to introduce you to a very good friend of mine, Todd Sebastian, who leads Link Training and Consulting. Todd is motivated by a simple mission to help clients connect more strongly with their target audiences. Over the course of his 30-year career, Todd has worked for some of the marketing industry's most prestigious companies, including Procter & Gamble as a brand manager, Dunnhumby USA as vice president of client leadership, Northlick chief client officer, and Interbrand as the executive director for North America. He's also been selected as a marketing partner by crazy, amazing, impressive clients such as DDB, Siegel & Gale, VaynerMedia, Clif Bar & Company, J&J, and Macy's. And one of the funniest things that I know about Todd that happened is that he became an author with an amazing tongue-in-cheek book titled Tell Your Clients Where to Go. It's a practical guide to providing passionate client leadership, and it's endorsed by John E. Pepper, the retired chairman and CEO of Procter & Gamble. He's also retired chairman of the Walt Disney Company. Todd has also had a passion for working with small businesses and entrepreneurs like myself, and that's how I became to know Todd in the first place. So Todd, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I know a lot about you, and I think we should say that you've also helped me with our business brand and our personal brand, so a couple of different capacities. Additionally, Todd and I have worked together with a few clients, helping them with their personal branding. So I can vouch for you, Todd. I know beyond your lengthy resume, just the passion that you have behind helping people. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from just being a devout Christian. You know, I firmly believe in taking whatever God decided to make me good at through a series of successes and failures and finding a way to help others with it. And so I just think that's where it came from. It's just innate. I'm just naturally a coach and a trainer and somebody who wants to help others with what God made me good at.
I'd love to tell people, because you have this amazing resume, but you have also made a transition between working in the big, and I do mean big corporate. I don't know that you can get much bigger than Procter & Gamble, right? So you've worked with these big corporate, inside these big corporate companies, and yet you took a leap to become an entrepreneur. How did that transition occur? Tell me your story behind that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, and it's not an easy thing to do, to leave a job with P&G to do your own thing, or to leave a P&G and go anywhere for that matter, because it's, you know, if you want to be in marketing and branding, that's the company to be with. For me, again, it goes back to this innate and this everlasting desire I've had in my life to try and coach and help and train people and to really do something meaningful in life, to have a strong purpose. So working for P&G, as an example, was wonderful. It was a great training ground. I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to have worked there and worked with some of the smartest people I've ever met. But at the end of the day, I get way more personal fulfillment out of helping small businesses or nonprofit organizations or individuals who really want to do something meaningful with their lives and add some topspin to what they're doing and help them be successful. Selling more Tide for P&G, you know, there's something wrong with that, but I don't get a whole lot of fulfillment out of helping P&G sell more Tide or more consumer goods. Again, there's something wrong with that. And it's a great job, but I would much rather say help a nonprofit organization that has a really strong mission, but they're not necessarily good at marketing and branding, and use my marketing and branding skills to help them perpetuate that mission in a meaningful way. So it just comes out of a passion of helping people and having a positive and meaningful impact on the world.
And I think that's something that we share in common and probably one of the reasons that we get along so well. So I know we're going to be talking about personal branding, and you've helped hundreds of individuals and probably thousands of clients, corporate clients, to do exactly that. But before we get into the bread and butter of our conversation today, I'd like to do what we call the lightning round of questions.
All right.
So are you ready?
I think so.
Here we go. Marital status.
Single, divorced.
Worst job ever.
Was washing dishes in a restaurant.
Best job ever.
Was being a line cook in a restaurant. So interestingly, I've worked in restaurants all through high school and college, and I hated washing dishes, but man, I loved cooking. That's where I got a passion for cooking.
And you still have that passion, right?
I still have that passion, yeah.
What is your favorite movie?
Probably Elf. And not just favorite Christmas movie, but favorite movie. That just cracks me up every time I watch it.
Favorite actor?
Tom Hanks. Love him in everything.
Favorite musical artist?
Probably the Grateful Dead. I know that's probably surprising because I don't look like a Deadhead, but I'm a huge Deadhead.
Best concert you've ever attended?
Was The Who in 1982, which was supposed to be their farewell tour, and they've had about 20 farewell tours since then.
And what are your hobbies?
Cooking, as we just said, and anything to do with cooking. So I actually love grocery shopping. I love talking about food. I love watching the Food Network, and I love gardening.
Favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving. And not because of eating turkey, because I'm a vegan, as I just said, but because I just love the notion of being grateful and showing gratitude.
Favorite time of the year?
Fall. Love the weather. I love college football.
Best gift ever?
Trip to Jamaica.
Worst gift ever?
Underwear. But it was for my sweet grandmother, so I still loved it.
Who gives you the best advice?
My son, actually. My son is, and he's 16, and he's one of the smartest, just most rational and logical thinkers I know. So he actually gives me great advice.
Favorite color?
Black. Flexible. Well, so first of all, I have gray hair, so black matches it perfectly. And it's just easy to match with everything else.
And when is your birthday?
2 days after Christmas. So it rarely gets recognized.
Well, happy birthday in advance. I think we should have a summer birthday for you.
I like it.
Okay. So that ends our lightning round, but I have a few kind of bonus questions, if you will, if you can humor me a little bit. I love that the juxtaposition that we can go through with the next question for you. Your favorite quote or scripture?
Motivated by it every day. So it's Philippians 4:6-7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Jesus Christ. And the reason why that's my favorite is because I grew up with a ton of anxiety. I had a pretty horrible childhood. We won't get into that here. A different session for a different podcast. But nonetheless, it left me with a tremendous amount of insecurity and anxiety and trepidation. And I had to work really, really, really hard to overcome all that. But nonetheless, you know, it still sort of bubbles below the surface in me. And that's just a great reminder to give your anxiety to God and don't feel like you got to shoulder it all yourself. So it's a wonderful piece of scripture. And as I said, I look at it every day as a reminder to just sort of rebalance myself.
When you were assisting me with doing a rebrand for my multimedia company, Lifesize Media, mm-hmm. that exact scripture was written out and put on my computer. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Okay.
Did we talk about it then during the workshop?
I don't think we talked about it in the workshop.
I don't think so either.
Wow. That's interesting because, you know, the Bible has a lot of scriptures in it that motivate a lot of people in different ways. Because it teaches them differently. I find that interesting that you and I have that same scripture.
Yeah. I mean, it's by far my favorite piece of scripture. In that it's the one that I look to every single day for help, and it provides help every day.
Wow. That was awesome. Thanks for sharing that portion of your story with us too. And it leads me into asking, have there been some people that have come alongside you, maybe mentors that have helped you along the way?
There has, for sure. And mentors in different ways. But honestly, you know, it's interesting and frankly, it was flattering in your introduction of me that you called me a mentor, because I would say the same right back to you. You and TC, I think are mentors in terms of people that model what it means to not just say all the right Christian things, but to actually live them and breathe them and build them into everything you do all day, every day. And what you guys are doing with Seeds of Glory and everything else in your life is just constantly going past talk and actually putting your Christian values into action all day, every day. And so for me, people like you are mentors for a variety of reasons. I mean, you know, and you are a mentor not only as a Christian, but also as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as somebody who just gets stuff done. I'll say that nicely. But, you know, it's just so you are a perfect example. But thankfully, I have others as well, too.
So do you have, and I am, I'm really humbled to hear you say that, because I'm honored that you and I are in a relationship, professional relationship. But then most of my professional relationships end up being in a personal nature, because oftentimes, I know I've done this with you, like, what's going on? Can I pray for you? Or I'll just tell you, I see what's going on and I'll be praying for you. But have you had any of your other mentors in your life where it's been more formal that you've said, I would like for you to mentor me? And then if so, what does that look like? Or even informal, what does it look like?
Yeah, well, it's definitely more the latter versus the former, because the idea of formal mentorship, I find, doesn't necessarily work for me, because, and I worked at Procter & Gamble and other places where they had formal mentorship programs, you know, so it was like, you know, forced mentorship. To me, it has to be informal. It has to be with somebody that you really connect with, not just professionally, but personally. And if you really connect with them personally, then it's no longer formal, it's informal. So, you know, most of my mentors and the people that I go to for advice are people that maybe started off as a formal relationship. Like, I mean, I guess you can say you and I started off as a formal relationship. You know, we were client and consultant, but it quickly became more than that. Most of my clients that I've been with for a long time, you know, I'm extremely good friends with the CEO, not just client agency relationship type thing. And they become mentors of mine. And so many of the clients that I've been working with for years, serve as not just clients, but also as friends, as colleagues, and as mentors, and as a sounding board.
So this might sort of piggyback off of that. Is there anyone who motivates you?
In terms of like somebody personally in my life, or just somebody out there in the world?
Yeah, you get to go with both for me.
Okay. You know, for me, and this sounds like such, I don't know, an overused answer, but for me, it's real, is Oprah. I absolutely find her so motivating. And the reason why I find her so motivating is because she brings other people into the fold. I'm assuming you're probably familiar with her Soulful Conversation podcast. Mm-hmm. And the people that she brings onto that and exposes people like me to, you know, like Brené Brown and Eckhart Tolle, and the list goes on and on and on. So it's not just her, but it's her in extension of her incredible network. And the vast breadth and depth of perspective that she and her guests provide is just amazing to me. But then, I mean, if you just think about her in and of herself, you know, where she's come from and where she is now and how successful she's been as a human being, as a philanthropist, as an entrepreneur, and in every other aspect of her life, and it's all self-made. So that to me is incredibly inspirational. So I actually listen to her podcast probably 3 or 4 times a week.
Let me ask the next question. Do you have any life-changing or life-altering stories that you'd like to share with our audience?
I think probably for me, the biggest one, and I'm still kind of going through it, was just a really unexpected and unbelievably painful divorce about a year ago. It just came out of nowhere. It was completely unexpected. It was somebody with whom I thought I'd be with for the rest of my life. And it just really, really, really sort of shook me to my core And for the first time in my life, you know, at 51 years old, I felt just completely broken, completely without purpose, and having some really, really, really sort of dark thoughts. I mean, for the very first time in my life. You know, I mentioned I've had anxiety before, but I've never had depression. I've never felt worthless. I never felt any of those things, but I really did. And, you know, it was by the grace of God, as well as going to some Christian-run divorce support groups and meeting some really strong Christians who had gone through the same type of thing, that really helped me get back on my feet. And, you know, and I'm still getting there. I'm a lot farther along than I was when it first happened. But that was probably it. Nothing else in my life even remotely comes close to the impact that had on me. But coming out of it, I'm learning a lot about myself, and I'm learning a lot that is making me feel good about myself. I'm realizing that I have, you know, inner strength that I didn't realize I had before. I'm realizing that I can open up to other people and get help and support that I never really tried before. It wasn't that I was, say, anti-therapy or anything like that, but I just kind of grew up in a world where you just kind of took your feelings and shoved them down, and you never really exposed them. And I've been amazed at how much help and support I feel when I open up to other people and share what's going on. So I think in the end, it's going to be a very, very good thing, but it's been very, very tough.
All right, let's see if we can make this lighter. Can you turn your embarrassing moment into something we might laugh about? So maybe share an embarrassing moment and tell us how you survived it.
I think, and it's the one that my family continues to tell to this day. It goes back to when I was, I think, 16 years old, you know, and I was considered the smart kid in the family and, you know, got great grades and was logical and everything else. So I was visiting a friend. I was in high school, and my friend had just gone to Villanova. I was living in Connecticut. My friend had just got into Villanova, so he was a freshman. Villanova, for the purpose of this story, is in Pennsylvania. So I hopped on a train, and I was headed to go visit him. And when I heard the conductor say Penn Station, I got flustered and got off because I thought we were in Pennsylvania. So I'm sitting there in Penn Station, on a bench next to a homeless guy. And I finally said to him, "Are we in Pennsylvania?" And he said, "No, we're in New York." And I didn't have enough money to get on a train to go to Pennsylvania. So I had to wait for the next train back to where I came from, and hop on a train and go back. And this is in the days before there were cell phones. So I couldn't text anybody or call anybody and let them know where I was. So, you know, my friend was waiting for me in Pennsylvania, trying to call my family to figure out where I was. And at the end of the day, everyone realized I just messed up and thought Penn Station was in Pennsylvania. But I just got flustered. I heard Penn Station and I got flustered. And by the way, why is Penn Station in New York, right? It makes no sense.
I'm sure there's a reason behind it. I'll do some research and send you the info.
Well, I'd love to know. It's confusing.
Today, I'd really like for us to focus some time on personal branding, since you were what I would consider a subject matter expert in that. The strongest brands stand for something that is clear, concise, and compelling, and everything they do consistently reinforces that. Yep. So it's important items such as logos, taglines, product service names, websites, business brochures, et cetera, all those marketing assets, right? Mm-hmm. But those shouldn't be created in a vacuum. Rather, they need to tie back to strongly and reinforce what the brand actually stands for. You do a lot with clients on brand strategy. So what exactly does brand strategy mean?
Typically, you know, when people think about what a brand is, you know, they think it's a logo, they think it's a tagline, they think it's the look and feel. And those are all important aspects of a brand. But that's where a brand ends, not where it begins. Those things are the external and executional translations of what a brand stands for, and that's its strategic intent. So you have to go back to think about a brand strategy. And if we think about a brand strategy, to explain what that means, we have to break that down into the two words that make it up. So a brand is not a logo. It's not a tagline. It's a promise of something. And that something is of an experience. Once we understand what that promise is, then we can understand how to execute it in a way that people will see it and live it through a logo and a tagline and all that. But it's a decision as to what we want to promise and what experience do we want people to get out of engaging with our brand. And then a strategy is one of those words that is used all day, every day in business, but almost always incorrectly. Most people think a strategy is a plan, and someone who is strategic is smart. That's not really exactly right. Ultimately, a strategy is a choice. It's a choice on how you're going to deliver on an objective, because you can't do all things with limited resources. You can't be all things to all people. Otherwise, you're nothing to no one. So you have to make a choice around what it is you want to stand for, or a choice around what it is you want to do. Once you make that choice, then you can develop a plan. So ultimately, yes, a strategy culminates in a plan, but it's not synonymous. One leads to the other. So if a brand is a promise and a strategy is a choice, then a brand strategy is a choice, and by the way, a very tough one, around what you want your brand to stand for. And the more focused it is, the better. Because again, if you try to be all things to all people, you're nothing to no one. And this is where many brands break down, is because they can't make those tough choices. And that's oftentimes why it's helpful to bring independent consultants like you and I into the fold, because we don't have all the baggage around what we think the brand stands for and all the things that we want to say about it. Because the reality is, we might want to say a lot of stuff about our brand because we're so passionate about it, but our audience doesn't want to hear all that. They want to just quickly understand, why should I care? Tell me as quickly as possible. Don't tell me in 17 sound bites, tell me in one. So it really is about making a clear and tough choice around what you want to promise. Once you know that, then you can start executing a logo and a name and all that.
So what are some things that do make a strong brand?
Well, to me, it has to follow what I call the four C's. And you rattled them off a few minutes ago, but it has to be clear, it has to be concise, and it has to be compelling. And then everything that we say and everything that we do has to be done in a consistent manner. If I was to look at a brand, look at their website, look at their packaging, look at their sales collateral, look at their sales presentations, and look at maybe their PR, if I'm getting a different message in all these different touch points, that's going to confuse me. And if I'm confused about what your brand stands for, I'm no longer going to care. So consistency is key. But it starts with being clear, concise, and compelling, and then being consistent about it. That's key to making a brand strong.
So this leads me into the space where you and I have worked together. I know that people can have brands. So What does a person's personal brand look like?
What does it look like? That's an interesting way to phrase the question. So again, whatever it looks like, first of all, is what it's intended to be, right? So, what it could look like is how the person dresses, how they talk, what phrases they use, what catchphrases they use. But that's what it looks like, right? But again, let's go back up to what we just said about, typical brands. All those things, what it looks like is an executional translation of your strategic intent. So people need to back up and say, okay, what is the strategic intent of my brand? Once I understand what that is, then I'll worry about what it looks like. What color is my logo behind me? What kind of typography am I using? How do I dress? That's what a personal brand looks like, but it's based on what I want to be. So you have to understand what your strategic intent is. And just like I do for products and services, I help people develop strategic brand positioning documents for their personal brands, like I did with you. And I use the exact same approach, because I firmly believe that anything, whether it's a person, place, or a thing, can and should be branded. And the approach is exactly the same regardless of what it is you're branding. You start with a strategy, then you get into execution.
Would you agree with me that everyone has a personal brand, whether you overtly mean to or not?
Absolutely, without question. And whether you're in business or not, absolutely. There's no question about it. When you meet somebody and you form an image of them, that in your mind is what their brand is. You know, you may not be thinking that branding term, they may not be thinking that branding term, but absolutely. You have an opinion, you form a viewpoint of that person, and that's their person's brand in your eyes. That's what they stand for. That's their equity.
I hear people constantly who are not in our space will say, why do I see the same commercial over and over and over again? So a short answer behind that is because it takes people, fact is, 6 to 7 times that they see a brand in front of their face before they take an action step. And right. An action step might just be investigating. It might not be purchasing right. the product or service.
Right.
So a little backstory, when I was in my first company, small business, the branding color was prominently green. And so I went out and bought a wardrobe of green. And I would go to all of the networking events and events that my company produced and that sort of thing wearing green. And I was wondering if people were actually going to see that I'm constantly branding my company. It was reinforced to me a number of times because I was wearing green. People were like, man, you're really all about your company.
Yeah.
They do acknowledge it. Right. And when they see the logo or the brand, they see the color. Now that is the visual. Mm-hmm. But then I want to go to the secondary part. When I started Kristen Getze Enterprises, this current company, colors are quite different. They're not green. It's that mm-hmm. beautiful blue and that beautiful purple that we've coordinated together. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that the colors are different, but what I started focusing on based on your coaching with me is, you know, how do people see my brand?
Right.
And I was wondering if people see me the way I see me in my personal brand. Mm-hmm. And as of late, it's been really reinforced. Mm-hmm. So Todd, you know, I'm a hugger, right? Like I'll meet somebody and I'll do the nice handshake upon meeting, but upon the leaving, we're gonna have a hug if we had like a paragraph conversation, because that's just who I am.
Yeah.
So I had someone who has known me for quite a long time and they traveled here from Texas and I'm in Kentucky. And upon the hello, it was, I have been looking forward during my whole drive to get to you so that I can get a hug, because your hugs are like magic.
Oh yeah, nice.
And I thought that that was like a beautiful compliment about the brand, because yep. I feel like in the whole brand that we have, it creates a presence, and it's a presence of how other people perceive us.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And so we get to dictate from our personal brand what other people are thinking about us by our actions, by our behaviors.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's when I go back to strategic intent. It has to be intentional. And sorry to interrupt you, but that's exactly right. That's the intention I'm talking about.
So here's my question. If I see myself as this way, but I really want to be this way when other people are looking at me, is there a possibility to make the transition from who I am to where I want to be?
The answer is maybe, right? It really, really depends. It depends on how big of a gap you're trying to bridge and how reasonable that is. Now, I firmly believe that, look, I do believe people can change. And you always hear the adage, people don't change. I don't believe that. I think people can change. I just think you have to be realistic around where are you now? Where do you want to be? And do you firmly believe it's realistic that over time, you know, it's not going to happen tomorrow. You have to be patient and you have to be disciplined and you have to be consistent. But if you have to ask yourself, if I am disciplined and I am consistent, do I think I can legitimately get there over 1, 2, or 3 years? And maybe ask other people who know you really, really well too, so they can give you more of an objective answer. But I believe that you can stretch your brand to somewhere else if you think that's appropriate. It just takes work, but it takes understanding, again, where do you want to be? You have to have that vision, and then you have to be intentional to get there.
I think this leads really well into personal branding processes within how you help people with personal brands. You do reach out to people within the person you're working with, their personal orbit, to find out, is your perspective the same as what other people see you? You want to expand on why you do that?
Yeah, well, and again, I do that because, you know, we all have blind spots, right? Nobody can be completely objective about themselves and see themselves from all possible viewpoints. We see ourselves from only one viewpoint, and that's our own. And so whether I'm doing branding for a person or a product or a service, you know, I want to get the viewpoints of the people that consume, if you will, that brand. Whether you're consuming their service, their product or engaging with that person, which is a form of consumption, if you will. And I want to understand, how is this brand currently perceived so that I, as an expert in what I do, can make a logical assumption about how far I think we can extend that brand. But I need to understand where we're starting from. So that really helps me get a strong benchmark based on not just my own observations, but observations of other people who are currently consuming that brand and very, very familiar with it, beyond just the person who either is the brand or manages the brand. Because I can tell you, when we're talking about products and services, brand managers can be pretty myopic too, because they're responsible for the brand in its current state. So they're pretty subjective as well too. So I'm trying to get an objective benchmark as to where we are so I can understand where we're going to go and is it possible to get there.
I'm sure there's hundreds of examples, but can you give me some of your top examples of really good personal brands?
A couple come to mind immediately. Who's the science guy?
Bill Nye.
Right? So think about that. Bill Nye, the science guy. How awesome of a brand is that? And by the way, it's not just a clever line, right? So he's a science guy, right? But that's not just a line that we remember. That then means something. Here is a guy who made it his mission in life to build awareness and appreciation for science, right? And so everything he does, his strategic intent is to do that. Now, he created this label called Bill Nye the Science Guy, which is this really nice rhyming device that helps us remember that. But it's more than just a cute tagline. It's a cute tagline and a memorable tagline that reinforces his ultimate mission in life, to bring awareness and appreciation for science. So I think that's a fantastic, fantastic example. Martha Stewart, what does she say all the time? What's her catchphrase? It's a good thing, right? I mean, that's her thing. It's a good thing. And her things are cooking, they're crafting, they're interior design, they're gardening. So she has her brand in all sorts of different facets, but it's all about this sophistication of making it good, right? And so how do you make these things good where you can be proud of them and you can be proud to share them with your family and friends? So it's this sophistication around doing things with and making them good.
In talking about Martha Stewart, I think it's really interesting that people see the brand bigger than they see the person in her capacity. Her being arrested didn't really affect the brand.
Short term, absolutely, but no one even talks about it anymore, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can argue that her going to prison was an inconsistent aspect of her brand, right? But since then, she's been hyper-consistent again. So that consistency post going to jail has erased that sort of one misstep in our minds, and she's gotten way back on track and stayed on track with what her brand stands for.
All right, so let's nail this. What is your personal brand?
Yeah, my personal brand is My purpose. So I break a brand into purpose, promise, proof, and personality. But it starts with the why. You'll often hear Simon Sinek say, you know, it starts with why. A brand starts with its purpose. And my purpose is hell-bent on helping others. And it's about helping. And so you heard me earlier on in this conversation talk about how much passion I have for helping others and really having a meaningful impact on them and what they're doing in the world. And so as a consultant, I'm all about help. That is the key word. And I try to do so in being very practical and very actionable in the consultation and the training that I provide. So I try to avoid just talking at a 30,000 foot level and providing people with this sort of austere guidance, but rather I give them very practical, actionable steps that they can find helpful. So I'm all about providing help. I am determined to help my clients do what they need to do, which is connect with their target audiences.
I think your tagline, if I'm not mistaken, is create stronger connections.
Right, creating stronger connections, absolutely. So, you know, so my personal brand very much is interwoven with my company's brand, right, because I'm the leader of my company. So before I came up with the name Link, you know, before I came up with that tagline, before I came up with the logo, before I came up with anything, the names of my products and services, I, on a piece of paper, wrote down what I want my brand strategy to be, starting with that notion of hell-bent on helping others. And by the way, hell-bent on helping others sort of speaks to the personalities here, right? There's an attitudinal nature to that. It's not just about helping, it's hell-bent on helping. which really speaks to just how passionate and sincere and determined I am about that. But ultimately, it's about helping them connect with their customers or clients. So once I understood my strategic intent, and that got fleshed out with a promise statement and some proof points and some more personality words, but once I understood that strategic intent, then I came up with the name Link. Then I came up with the logo with the two links that you see there connected. Working with my designer, determining why they should be square links, not circular links, because square equals strength. Picking colors that speak to the practicality and the engagement of what I want to do. So that that dark gray speaks to practicality. The bright orange speaks to engagement. The tagline speaks to what I want to do. So again, when we talk about, you know, you said earlier, what does a brand look like? Well, ultimately a brand looks like it should based on delivering against a strategic intent. So all those choices were made to deliver against that strategic intent.
You did write a book.
Yes.
It's not necessarily about personal branding. You're still working on that one, right?
I'm still working on that one, yeah. And by that meaning, I haven't gotten started yet, but yeah, I'm still working on it.
So the book that you have written is called Tell Your Clients Where to Go.
Yeah.
What's the premise behind it, and who is your target market for it?
Yeah. So it's about client service and a notion that go beyond client service, give clients what they're really looking for, which is thought leadership. Right? So don't just do what clients ask you to do, do what they also need and be a consultative partner to your clients. And so the reason why I wrote a book about that, even though I spend most of my time doing marketing and branding, is because prior to starting my own company, I was in a client service role in the marketing and branding industry for so long. And I saw how much opportunity there was to improve the agency-client relationship from both sides, as to be a better client and to be a better client service provider. And so the book is for anybody who is a client and works with client service providers, or on the other side of that equation, anybody who is a client service provider. But it speaks to how to go beyond just these transactional agency client relationships and into something that is much more strategic and much more consultative. And that's why there's the play on the words, tell your clients where to go. That's not to say tell them to go, you know, F off, is to say, provide strategic consultation direction for what they should be doing next to grow their business. Be a partner in their business, not just a provider of service.
And people can find your book, Tell Your Clients Where to Go, on your
Amazon.
Website. On Amazon.
On my website, but ultimately on Amazon, yes.
Okay, and your website is?
LinkTrainingAndConsulting.com. And I will also say that 100% of my author proceeds from book sales go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Todd, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. I know it is very valuable, and I know you've given a lot of good information, but if we could sum up personal branding in somebody going, well, how do I get started? What do they need to do?
They need to talk to someone like you or me. That they need an expert that's going to help guide them through the process and to provide objective perspective and consultation. But, you know, whether they work with an outside consultant or not, it starts with, you know, don't start thinking about executional things like taglines and catchphrases and what your wardrobe is going to be. Think about your strategic intention. What do you want to stand for? What is your purpose?
Thanks for listening to Bubble Wrap. I'm your host, Kristen Getze. If you would like to grow in your communications, look me up on the World Wide Web at KristenGetze.com. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate it, and share it. Until we wrap next time, may your cup runneth over.
You've also started, I just know because I know you, you've also started something on the side that's related to food. What is that thing you've started?
So I had become a vegan a couple years ago. And so I started a website called Vegan Porkopolis. For those who don't know about Cincinnati's heritage, it's rooted in meat. It used to be the largest pork producer in the United States. In the United States. And, you know, as a result, it's not the easiest place in the world for a vegan to find vegan options because it's such a meat-centric city. So Vegan Porkopolis is obviously a bit of a play on words, and it's meant to highlight restaurants in Cincinnati that are vegan and or vegan friendly.
Excellent.